Chapter 77. Progress of Monsieur Cavalcanti the Younger. Meanwhile, Monsieur Cavalcanti the Elder had returned to his service, not in the army of His Majesty the Emperor of Austria, but at the gaming table of the Baths of Lucca, of which he was one of the most assiduous courtiers. He had spent every farthing that had been allowed for his journey as a reward for the majestic and solemn manner in which he had maintained his assumed character of father. Monsieur Andrea, at his departure, inherited all the papers, which proved that he had indeed the honour of being the son of the Marquis Bartolomeo and the Marchioness Oliva Corsinari. He was now fairly launched in that Parisian society which gives such ready access to foreigners, and treats them not as what they really are, but as what they wish to be considered. Besides, what is required of a young man in Paris? To speak its language tolerably, to make a good appearance, to be a good gamester, and to pay in cash. They are certainly less particular with a foreigner than with a Frenchman. Andrea had then, in a fortnight, attained a very fair position. He was entitled Monsieur le Comte. He was said to possess 50,000 livres per annum, and his father's immense riches buried in the quarries of Saravezza were a constant theme. Such was the state of society in Paris at the period we bring before our readers, when Monte Cristo went one evening to pay Monsieur Danglars a visit. Monsieur Danglars was out, but the Count was asked to go and see the Baroness, and he accepted the invitation. When Monte Cristo entered the boudoir, to which we have already once introduced our readers, and where the Baroness was examining some drawings, which her daughter passed to her after having looked at them with Monsieur Cavalcanti, his presence soon produced its usual effect, and it was with smiles that the Baroness received the Count, although she had been a little disconcerted at the announcement of his name. The latter took in the whole scene at a glance. The Baroness was partially reclining on a causeuse. Eugénie sat near her, and Cavalcanti was standing. Cavalcanti, dressed in black like one of Goethe's heroes, with japanned shoes and open white silk stockings, passed a white and tolerably nice-looking hand through his light hair, in the midst of which sparkled a diamond which, in spite of Monte Cristo's advice, the vain young man had been unable to resist putting on his little finger. This movement was accompanied by killing glances at Mademoiselle Danglars, and sighs addressed to the same party. Mademoiselle Danglars was still the same, cold, beautiful, and satirical. Not one of these glances, nor one sigh, was lost on her. They might have been said to fall on the shield of Minerva, which some philosophers assert protected sometimes the breast of Sappho. Eugénie bowed coldly to the Count, and availed herself of the first moment when the conversation became earnest to escape her study, whence very soon two cheerful and noisy voices being heard, in connection with some notes of the piano, assured Monte Cristo that Mademoiselle Danglars preferred to his society and to that of Monsieur Cavalcanti the company of Mademoiselle Louise d'Armilly, her singing governess. It was then, especially while conversing with Madame Danglars, and apparently absorbed by the charm of the conversation, the Count remarked Monsieur Andrea Cavalcanti's solicitude, his manner of listening to the music at the door he dared not pass, and of manifesting his admiration. The banker soon returned. His first look was certainly directed towards Monte Cristo, but the second was for Andrea. As for his wife, he bowed to her, as some husbands do to their wives, but in a way which bachelors will never comprehend until a very extensive code is published on conjugal life.
"Have not the ladies invited you to join them at the piano?" said Danglars to Andrea.
"Alas, no, sir," replied Andrea, with a sigh still more remarkable than the former ones.
Danglars immediately advanced towards the door and opened it. The two young ladies were seen seated on the same chair at the piano, accompanying themselves each with one hand, a fancy to which they had accustomed themselves, and performed admirably. Mademoiselle d'Armilly, whom they then perceived through the open doorway, formed with Eugénie one of those living pictures of which the Germans are so fond. She was somewhat beautiful and exquisitely genteel, a little fairy-like figure with large curls falling on her neck, which was rather too long, as Perugino sometimes makes his virgins, and her eyes dull from fatigue. She was said to have a weak chest, and like Antonia of the Violon de Cremon, she would die one day while singing. Monte Cristo cast one rapid and curious glance round this sanctum. It was the first time he had ever seen Mademoiselle d'Armilly, of whom he had heard much.
"Well," said the banker to his daughter, "are we then all to be excluded?"
He then led the young man into the study, and either by chance or manoeuvre the door was partially closed after Andrea, so that from the place where they sat neither the Count nor the Baroness could see anything. But as the banker had accompanied Andrea, Madame Danglars appeared to take no notice of it. The Count soon heard Andrea's voice singing a Corsican song accompanied by the piano. While the Count smiled at hearing this song, which made him lose sight of Andrea in the recollection of Benedetto, Madame Danglars was boasting to Monte Cristo of her husband's strength of mind, who that very morning had lost 300,000 or 400,000 francs by a failure at Milan. The praise was well deserved, for had not the Count heard it from the Baroness, or by one of those means by which he knew everything, the Baron's countenance would not have led him to suspect it. "Ham," thought Monte Cristo, "he begins to conceal his losses. A month since he boasted of them." Then aloud, "Oh, madame, Monsieur Danglars is so skilful he will soon regain at the Bourse what he loses elsewhere."
"I see you are entertaining an erroneous idea, as well as many more," said Madame Danglars.
"What is it?" said Monte Cristo.
"That Monsieur Danglars gambles, whereas he never plays."
"Truly, madame, I recollect Monsieur Debray told me. Apropos, what has become of him? I have seen nothing of him the last 3 or 4 days."
"Nor I," said Madame Danglars. "But you began a sentence, sir, and did not finish."
"Which?"
"Monsieur Debray had told you."
"Truly, he told me it was you who sacrificed to the demon of the card-table."
"I was once very fond of it, but I do not play now."
"Then you are wrong, madame. Fortune is precarious, and if I were a woman, and fate had made me a banker's wife, whatever might be my confidence in my husband's good fortune, still in speculation, you know, there is great risk. Well, I would secure for myself a fortune independent of him, even if I acquired it by placing my interests in hands unknown to him." Madame Danglars blushed, in spite of all her efforts. "Stay," said Monte Cristo, as though he had not observed her confusion.
"I have heard of a lucky hit that was made yesterday on the Neapolitan bonds." "I have none, nor have I ever possessed any. But really, we have talked long enough of money, Count. We are like two stockbrokers. Have you heard how fate is persecuting the poor Villeforts?"
"What has happened?" said the Count, apparently ignorant of all.
"You know the Marquis of Saint-Marin died a few days after he had set out on his journey to Paris, and the Marchioness a few days after her arrival."
"Yes," said Monte Cristo, "I have heard that."
"But that is not all."
"Not all?"
"No. They were going to marry their daughter to Monsieur Franz d'Epinay."
"Is it broken off?"
"Yesterday morning, it appears. Franz declined the honour."
"Indeed. And is the reason known?"
"No."
"How extraordinary. And how does Monsieur de Villefort bear it?"
"As usual, like a philosopher."
Danglars returned at this moment alone.
"Well," said the Countess, "do you leave Monsieur Cavalcanti with your daughter?"
"And Mademoiselle d'Armilly," said the banker. "Do you consider her no one?" Then, turning to Monte Cristo, he said, "Prince Cavalcanti is a charming young man, is he not? But is he really a prince?" "I will not answer for it," said Monte Cristo. "His father was introduced to me as a marquis, so he ought to be a count. But I do not think he has much claim to that title."
"Why," said the banker, "if he is a prince, he is wrong not to maintain his rank. I do not like anyone to deny his origin."
"Oh, you are a pure democrat," said Monte Cristo, smiling. "But do you see to what you are exposing yourself? If perchance Monsieur de Morcerf came, he would find Monsieur Cavalcanti in that room, where he, the betrothed of Eugénie, has never been admitted."
"You may well say, perchance," replied the banker, "for he comes so seldom, it would seem only chance that brings him."
"But should he come and find that young man with your daughter, he might be displeased."
"You are mistaken. Monsieur Albert would not do us the honour to be jealous. He does not like Eugénie sufficiently. Besides, I care not for his displeasure."
The valet announced Monsieur le Vicomte Albert de Morcerf. The Countess rose hastily and was going into the study when Danglars stopped her.
"Stay," said he.
She looked at him in amazement. Monte Cristo appeared to be unconscious of what passed. Albert entered, looking very handsome and in high spirits. He bowed politely to the Countess, familiarly to Danglars, and affectionately to Monte Cristo. Then, turning to the Countess,
"May I ask how Mademoiselle Danglars is?" said he.
"She is quite well," replied Danglars quickly. "She is at the piano with Monsieur Cavalcanti."
Albert preserved his calm and indifferent manner. He might feel, perhaps, annoyed, but he knew Monte Cristo's eye was on him.
"Monsieur Cavalcanti has a fine tenor voice," said he, and Mademoiselle Eugenie a splendid soprano, and then she plays on the piano like Thalberg. The concert must be a delightful one."
"They suit each other remarkably well," said Danglars.
Albert appeared not to notice this remark, which was, however, so rude that Madame Danglars blushed.
"I, too," said the young man, "am a musician. At least my masters used to tell me so. But it is strange that my voice never would suit any other, and a soprano less than any."
Danglars smiled and seemed to say, "It is of no consequence." Then, hoping doubtless to effect his purpose, he said,
"The prince and my daughter were universally admired yesterday. You were not of the party, Monsieur de Morcerf?"
"What prince?" asked Albert.
"Prince Cavalcanti," said Danglars,
who persisted in giving the young man that title.
"Pardon me," said Albert, "I was not aware he was a prince. And Prince Cavalcanti sang with Mademoiselle Eugenie yesterday? It must have been charming indeed. I regret not having heard them. But I was unable to accept your invitation, having promised to accompany my mother to a German concert given by the Countess of Chateau Renaud."
This was followed by rather an awkward silence.
"May I also be allowed," said Morcerf, "to pay my respects to Mademoiselle Danglars?"
"Wait a moment," said the banker, stopping the young man. "Do you hear that delightful cavatina? Ta-ta-ta-ta-ti-ta-ti-ta. It is charming. Let them finish."
One moment.
"Bravo, bravi, brava!"
The banker was enthusiastic in his applause.
"Indeed," said Albert, "it is exquisite. It is impossible to understand the music of his country better than Prince Cavalcanti does. You said prince, did you not? But he can easily become one, if he is not already. It is no uncommon thing in Italy. But to return to the charming musicians, you should give us a treat, Danglars, without telling them there is a stranger. Ask them to sing one more song. It is so delightful to hear music in the distance, when the musicians are unrestrained by observation."
Danglars was quite annoyed by the young man's indifference. He took Monte Cristo aside.
"What do you think of our lover?" said he.
"He appears cool, but then your word is given."
"Yes, doubtless I have promised to give my daughter to a man who loves her, but not to one who does not. Even if Albert had Cavalcanti's fortune, he is so proud I would not care to see him marry her."
"Oh," said Monte Cristo, "my fondness may blind me, but I assure you I consider Morcerf far preferable, and his father's position is good."
"Hem," said Danglars.
"Why do you doubt?"
"The past, that obscurity of the past."
"But that does not affect the son. A month since you thought well of him, and I know nothing of young Cavalcanti, although you met him at my house."
"But I do."
"Have you made inquiry?"
"Yes, and I know him to be rich."
"What do you suppose him worth?"
50,000 per annum, and he is well educated."
"Hem," said Monte Cristo in his turn.
"He is a musician."
"So are all Italians."
"Come, Count, you do not do that young man justice."
"Well, I acknowledge it annoys me, knowing your connection with the Morcerf family, to see him throw himself in the way." Danglars burst out laughing.
"What a Puritan you are," said he. "That happens every day."
"But you cannot break it off thus. The Morcerfs are depending on this union."
"Indeed?"
"Positively."
"Then let them explain themselves. You should give the father a hint, you who are so intimate with the family."
"I? Where the devil did you find that out?"
"At their ball, it was apparent enough. Why, did not the Countess, the proud Mercedes, the disdainful Catalane, who will scarcely open her lips to her oldest acquaintances, take your arm, lead you into the garden, into the private walks, and remain there for half an hour? But will you undertake to speak to the father?"
"Willingly, if you wish it."
"But let it be done explicitly and positively. If he demands my daughter, let him fix the day, declare his conditions. In short, let us either understand each other or quarrel. You understand? No more delay."
"Yes, sir, I will give my attention to the subject."
"I do not say I expect him with pleasure, but I do expect him. A banker must, you know, be a slave to his promise."
And Danglars sighed, as Monsieur Cavalcanti had done half an hour before.
"Bravo!"
cried Morcerf, as the scene closed. Danglars began to look suspiciously at Morcerf when someone came and whispered a few words to him.
"I shall soon return," said the banker to Monte Cristo. "Wait for me. I shall, perhaps, have something to say to you."
The Baroness took advantage of her husband's absence to push open the door of her daughter's study, and Monsieur Andrea, who was sitting before the piano with Mademoiselle Eugenie, started up like a spring.
Albert bowed to Mademoiselle Danglars with a smile, who, not appearing in the least disturbed, returned his bow with her usual coolness. Cavalcanti was evidently embarrassed. He bowed to Morcerf, who replied with the most impertinent look possible. Then Albert launched out in praise of Mademoiselle Danglars' voice, and on his regret, after what he had just heard, he had been unable to be present the previous evening. Cavalcanti, being left alone, turned to Monte Cristo.
"Come," said Madame Danglars, "leave music and compliments, and let us go and take tea."
"Come, Louisa," said Mademoiselle Danglars to her friend.
They passed into the next drawing-room, where tea was prepared. Just as they were beginning, in the English fashion, to leave the spoon in their cups, the door again opened, and Danglars entered visibly agitated. Monte Cristo observed it particularly, and by a look asked the banker for an explanation.
"I have just received my courier from Greece," said Danglars.
Ah, said the Count, "that was the reason of your running away from us."
"Yes."
"How is King Otho?"
asked Albert, in the most sprightly tone. Danglars cast another suspicious look towards him without answering, and Monte Cristo turned away to conceal the expression of pity which passed over his features, but which was gone in a moment.
"We shall go together, shall we not?"
said Albert to the Count. "If you like," replied the latter. Albert could not understand the banker's look, and turning to Monte Cristo, who understood it perfectly,
"Did you see," said he, "how he looked at me?"
"Yes," said the Count, "but did you think there was anything particular in his look?"
"Indeed I did. And what does he mean by his news from Greece?"
"How can I tell you?"
"Because I imagine you have correspondents in that country."
Monte Cristo smiled significantly.
"Stop," said Albert. "Here he comes. I shall compliment Mademoiselle Danglars on her cameo while the father talks to you."
Albert advanced towards Eugénie, smiling, while Danglars, stooping to Monte Cristo's ear,
"Your advice was excellent," said he. "There is a whole history connected with the names Fernand and Janina."
"Indeed?" said Monte Cristo.
"Yes, I will tell you all, but take away the young man. I cannot endure his presence."
"He is going with me. Shall I send the father to you?"
"Immediately."
"Very well." The Count made a sign to Albert. They bowed to the ladies and took their leave. Albert perfectly indifferent to Mademoiselle Danglars' contempt. Monte Cristo reiterating his advice to Madame Danglars on the prudence a banker's wife should exercise in providing for the future. Monsieur Cavalcanti remained master of the field.